Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this May 17th edition, pre-Malcolm X birthday edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. Well, today we hope we have a powerful show lined up for you to both listen to, but also to engage. We're going to spend a considerable amount of time today on the soapbox with you engaging on the phone. Shortly, our topic today should be of interest to our audience because a lot of people love Dick Gregory. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Ife Williams, the National President and Chief Executive Officer of the National Congress of Black Women, about a new book that's out on Dick Gregory. It's the life and legacy of Dick Gregory. We'll get the specific title as we move forward. But before we get into that interview with Dr. Ife Williams, we just want to continue to join with all of our colleagues here on WBAI, urging folks to be safe, to be disciplined. Unfortunately, we've run into, I think, some confusing COVID rules. I'll talk about that when I get up on the soapbox later. And that's because they issued these mandates, and I guess they were eager to do so, but it's kind of confusing in terms of, in terms of what you should be doing. Like who really? This is like a honor system among some of these people out here? That's a little scary. So how do you know who from who? And nobody really wants to be a vaccinating cop or have a vaccination passport. So my recommendation is I'm staying masked up. I'm fully vaccinated, but I'm staying masked up. That is to have nobody worry about me, but it's also to just signal that, we should all just keep hanging out together. And as I notice, I'm going in and out of locations here in the city. Most people are still sort of cautiously, staying masked up. Because these guidelines are confusing. The other thing is check the science. There's an urgent need, I think, to reach herd immunity. Obviously, some people are skeptical, and they should be, given the history, particularly in Black and Brown communities, about vaccination. But we have credible messengers from in the Black community, National Medical Association, and others who've come out. But you should do your own studying. And listen to the science, and you make the decision as to whether or not you want to get vaccinated or not. But there are ample reasons, I think, to do so, but based on careful examination of the science. The other thing is stress is important to deal with. There's a hell of a lot of stress out here on so many issues that we're dealing with, not the least of which is, sending kids back to school. Those who've had COVID, by the way, are going to be experiencing, many of them experience long-term symptoms that have to be addressed. And so we need to be sure that there are ways in which people can address that. So that's why the Institute of the Black World 21st Century's Black Family Summit has instituted a Community Cares Listening Line. You know about it. I talk about it every week. A Community Cares Listening Line. Community Cares Listening Line. It is a culturally appropriate vehicle by which if you are feeling anxious about anything, there's an increase in domestic violence, there's an increase in murders in our community. My goodness, I mean, it's just like I'm talking to Dorothy Johnson Spite in Philadelphia, Mothers in Charge, and she said, Ron, I just don't know what the hell is going on. I've never seen it so bad, the uptick in our community. And I think it's like it's people are COVID crazy. This stuff will drive you crazy, and the trauma is so deep. And so domestic violence, suicide, alcoholism, all these things are up. You can call a private confidential line, and it is private and confidential, to share just to talk to somebody, just to talk. And if you need assistance, we will give you a culturally appropriate referral, social worker, psychiatrist, psychologist, administrators in Black Child Welfare, all of them are lined up to help. Call 877-827-6677, 877-827-6677. And we are profoundly appreciative of the management here at WBAI for partnering with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century with this Community Cares Listening Line. As I said before, we're going to spend a great deal of time today talking about a number of issues that hopefully you'll be eager to talk about. So we have plenty of time to do that. But that's after we speak to our guests, our dear beloved sister, Dr. Ife Williams, who is the national president and CEO of the National Congress of Black Women. Dr. Ife Williams, welcome to Vantage Point.
Well, thank you so much. I know that you're doing a lot of things just as I am, and I want to first of all say thank you to all that you do for our community on reparations, on justice issues, and so much more. It seems the work never stops, does it?
No, it doesn't. And you, I got to say, you're right in the middle of it. And I really want to start off by making people aware. We've had you on before, but we want people to make you aware that you are a talk show host. You produce your own show on our sister station, WPFW in Washington, D.C. So would you just tell us what's the name of your show and what time does it air?
Well, my show is called Wake Up and Stay Woke. It's in remembrance of Dick Gregory. It's every Wednesday morning, 10 o'clock Eastern Time on WPFW FM 89.3. And, of course, we stream so people all over the world can hear our show. And we get a lot of calls. All of the guests who come on either know something about Dick Gregory, they've met him, or they have, read something, or they've seen something that he did. So that the book actually grew out of that in remembrance of Dick Gregory.
Right. Well, I'm going to start there because I want to just go back, and I'm always interested in how things evolve and develop. So really my question is, how did you actually meet Dick Gregory, and what was your relationship like?
Well, that's funny. The very first chapter in my book is called How I Met Dick Gregory. When I was running for the United States Congress in my home state of Louisiana some years ago, he had a daughter who was in school at Louisiana State University. And he came down to visit with the daughter. While he was there, Congressman Dimerly, who was one of my big supporters, decided to bring Mr. Gregory to an event I was having. I was having a dinner, as politicians always have to have. And I was talking about my mom and all the things that she told me. And he came up right after me, and you would have thought that he had practiced for this. He started out by saying, to my mom, I need to talk with you because I have a problem talking with my children. The only way I can get to talk to them is pull my chair up to the refrigerator. Then I can talk with them. He was like, how do you remember all these things that your mother told you? And so that's how it got started at that event. And then once the campaign was over, he invited me to come to the health clinic that he had down in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, so that I could sort of take a break and redirect my attention. So I went to Fort Walton Beach, and I had an opportunity to spend a week with him at that point, and he gave lots of lectures. So it was just one lecture after another since that point. When I moved back to Washington, D.C., we reconnected, and there he invited a lot of friends over to my place so that he could teach them how to make hamburgers without meat. That was an interesting situation because, most black people eat meat. And he taught them how they could use cheese and use all kinds of bean burgers and what have you.
Right.
And so he just took over my house and started teaching people how to do those burgers.
Right,
and the rest is history. We became protest partners after that, and there was no protest that was too small for us. We actually would keep plaques in our cars, and we could be riding down the street, see a number of people protesting, get out and say, what are you protesting? And almost always it was an issue we were interested in, whether it was, raising the minimum wage, whether it was being against the war, whatever. And we just go back to our cars and get a poster, and it was always appropriate because we were always having posters about peace and justice and things like that, so they were always appropriate.
Right. What's the title of your book? Share your title of the book with your audience, and you're already beginning to get into it. And why did you write it?
Well, the name of the book is "Wake Up and Stay Woke: those were some of the last words I heard Mr. Gregory say on the day that he left us. Actually, that morning, the Saturday morning, when he left us later in the day, we were dealing with a situation from Charlottesville where the young woman was run over by a car that day. And there were just loads of people in his room. It was almost like everybody was visiting him for the last time, but not knowing it. But the room was very, very noisy. And so no matter how much his daughter, Yana, and I tried to keep the room quiet, the people were just talking and laughing and what have you. And he just kind of, he hadn't been raising up or anything in the bed. He just kind of raised up and said, "Wake up." And, of course, he used some language I wouldn't use, but it basically meant wake up. Wake up and stay woke. And so that kind of stayed with me because I'd heard him use it before, but it was also the last words we basically had the day that he left us. And so ever since then, I've been working on that subject and deciding that people needed to know that he was more than a comic, that he was so much more. He did so much for the civil rights movement and social justice and all. So I decided to remember some of the things that he told me and just kind of jot them down on a piece of paper here and there, and ultimately decided that I would put it together. He has a documentary coming out over the next few weeks, and it's going to coincide with the introduction of my book, Wake Up and Stay Woke. And, it's just that I wanted people to know all of these other things about him, how he grew up. Many people don't know, you know, that he grew up very poor. And I would listen to some of the things he said. For instance, when someone brought a turkey over for his family to cook, you know, somebody from social services, he asked him if it were cooked already. And he said, "No, you can just take it on back where you got it. We ain't got no stove to cook it on." So that was real. That was not really a joke. It was that kind of right. thing that happened to him as he was growing up. And I just thought that people who maybe didn't have a lot of hope could read this book and think about how difficult growing up was for him. And yet he succeeded because he had hope. He had faith in himself that he could do something bigger and better. And he did just that. And he was all about service, you know, to our people. Anytime he was invited anywhere, even if the people couldn't pay him, he still went, you know, because he could have made a lot of money speaking, but he would go. All the civil rights organizations basically have had him to speak for them. And many times, even if they did have money, they, you know how some of our organizations are. They act like they don't when they invite us to speak somewhere. So he never said no because of the money.
Right. I can attest to that because I had a just remarkable, wonderful relationship with Dick Gregory on so many, many, many fronts. Isn't there something about running in the subtitle of your book?
Yes, Running for Life. Well, that was, you know, he was a track star.
Well, yeah, but the reason I'm asking that, Dr. Ife, the reason I'm asking for that is, you know, and it was refreshing to see the title because Dick Gregory did so much, but increasingly, you know, it was really focused on civil rights, human rights. It always was. Mm-hmm. But we kind of forget that for many years, he was mentoring us, just as you said, about how, no pun intended, how to eat to live. He ran, and he ran long distances, and he did a lot of fasting. I had forgotten about the fact that in some around some causes, he actually fasted. And
absolutely.
So forth. So the reason I mentioned that, because that's a dimension that even in my brain, knowing Dick Gregory, I had to remember that aspect of his life.
Yes, he certainly did. And I do have that diet that he mentioned, or the eating plan with all the vitamins that he used at one time with the Bahamian diet.
Well, right, I remember
he,
that, yes.
Left us, his friend John Bellamy took up the cause and developed another product that's similar to the Bahamian diet. It's called Dick Gregory's Sporex Plan, I think, gluten-free and plant-based protein powder. So I don't know. I think that's on the market now. It's called Dick Gregory's Caribbean Shake for Optimal Health, which is formerly the Bahamian diet. I decided to put it there because many people would remember it and remembered that it did work for them. It's a lot of vitamins, though. So, all the way, he was down to almost nothing, you know, when he passed away. He had lost so much weight, but right. that was due to fasting for various causes. You know, he's helped the Native Americans up in the Pacific Northwest. He went to Iran to help with our are people who were caught up there many years ago. He was always helping people learn to eat and to exercise, and don't forget the water. He always talked about how important it was for us to have water. Well, many of these things I mentioned in the book, but, you know, he was one of those people who loved sharing information. Didn't matter what the cause was. If he had the information, he was going to get it, and he was going to give it to our people for our betterment. And right. Sometimes people even thought of him as a prophet because he could seemingly see things in the future that we could not see. I remember back in the, at the time when Hillary Clinton was running for president of the United States, and he saw how enthusiastic I was about, we were about to have a woman president. And he just sat me down and he talked to me. He said, baby, it's not going to happen. He said, first of all, somebody else is going to be president. He didn't say elected. Somebody else is going to be president. And before that's over, they're going to have to call out the military. He was talking about how bad it was going to be. And, you know, at that time, I couldn't believe that. But didn't it all happen?
Yes. The other thing is, he was just so remarkable in so many ways, because what made him so effective in his civil rights, human rights advocacy was that he could always do it using his incredible gift for humor. I mean, he was an extraordinary comedian. I mean, that was his gift, but he turned it in a way that that was incredibly powerful. The other thing, and you probably touch on this in your book as well, is that the way he had relationships with ordinary people. I mean, he would get a lot of his information because he knew the cooks, the maids, the barbers. I mean, he just knew everybody.
Right. I mean, at the airport, it was like homecoming. We went to London together once on the BP problem we were dealing with. Even at the airport in London, people were just like he had just been there, you know, they knew him. No matter where in the world he went, there was someone who knew him. And here in this country, he could be walking down the street, and a brother just walk up and say, hey, Brother Greg, can you spare a dollar? Well, he always gave them more. Even if he didn't have the money, he'd turn around to me and say, let me have a couple of dollars or something like that.
Right.
He was always sure to help somebody who was asking for help. And one thing I can say is he always remembered to pay you back, but very often we'd be walking down the street and he'd see someone who needed the money and would certainly find it for him. And, of course, he was always ready to do a lecture and to sit and talk with someone, even if you were standing there waiting for him. He just never turned anybody down in order to get where he was going. He would give that up so that he could tell somebody what they needed to know or give them some kind of advice, make their life better. So it was interesting when we did his celebration of life that there were people from all walks of life who were there. I can remember people, just all kinds of people who came from everywhere to be sure that they were there to say goodbye to him. And I still miss him because we did so many things together. We picketed in so many places. We spoke to so many rallies, and I miss that.
Right. And this is a difficult question, but just as we conclude, and I'm going to ask you how people can get the book, but what would you say is his lasting legacy or legacies? I mean, how would you summarize it for us?
Well, I would just say that his major interest, no matter what, was service to our people, and it didn't matter what the cost was to him. He did it because he felt, as the saying in Black Panther, it is our duty, to protect our people, and he always tried to do that no matter what it cost him to do it. And he often, had lost a lot, lost a home once, lost many things helping other people, and he always did it with love. He felt that love was most important, and it was more important to be lovable than it is to be loved. So he tried to be lovable to all people, no matter who they were.
And how can people order the book?
Well, right now we're in pre-order, so at the moment they can order from by sending me an email at drefaywilliams@gmail.com, drefaywilliams@gmail.com. Pretty soon it will also be on, many of the other sites like Amazon, but right now we're doing the pre-sale. And if they want to call me to ask me for more information on how to do it, just call me on 202-554-0159. 554-0159 here in Washington, D.C., because right now we have many ways that it can be ordered in pre-sale.
Okay, well, we certainly wanted to, once you gave me the information, and by the way, I should alert the audience, Dr. Ife Williams, among other things, is also a commissioner on the National African American Reparations Commission, and we're proud to have her be so, and we have just done so many things together. Recently, you were, you know, on the national town hall meeting we had on Biden the first 100 days, and then we came back and you were able to be on the town hall meeting or the forum on a similar issue with Fraser Nation. So I also want to express my profound appreciation to you because you never say no. You're always there whenever we need you, and your organization is doing a fantastic job, you know, moving the agenda forward for our people. So we thank you
so much.
Well,
I learned a lot from him, and I want to say just in a few days I'll be, I am a member of the board of the World Conference of Mayors with Mayor Johnny Ford. We'll be going to Tulsa, Oklahoma, in remembrance of all the tragedies that happened there in the Tulsa area, the Greenwood area in Tulsa.
Right. Yeah, we'll be covering that here on the show. So thank you so much. Really appreciate you spending time with us this afternoon.
Thank you so much, and keep up your great work, too.
All right. Dr. Ife Williams with our sister station in Washington, D.C., her programs, Wake Up and Stay Woke, the book is out of the same title, Wake Up and Stay Woke, Running for Life. It is about the life and legacy of our beloved Dick Gregory. And so we want people to certainly, she's given you her number to call her at 212-554-0159, 202-554-0159. And the email address for her, I will grab it for you in a minute. I think it's Dr. Ife Williams at gmail.com. I think is what she gave out to us, but we'll certainly get that out to you. Now we want to shift to our soapbox segment, but we're going to begin with Malcolm X. And by the way, the number for our soapbox segment, we have plenty of time for people to call in with our 1 to 1.5 minute rapid fire engagement. Today will be, again, of course, 212-209-2881. 212-209-2881.
No, Professor. No, Professor. It is 212-209-2877.
Oh, how come I keep getting...
212-209-2877.
Okay, all right. I have my sheet has it all screwed up. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. 212-209-2877. That's because I have a blip on my sheet, and it has the numbers out of order. The three different numbers I have to remember. 212-209-2877 is the number. This coming Wednesday is, and I'm doing a piece, We Remember Malcolm. It is the birthday of Elhaj Malik El-Shabazz, our black shining prince, as eulogized by the one and only Ossie Davis. And one of the things I just want to do a brief tribute, and you may choose to do so as well. Dick Gregory, in 1990, when we were building the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, we went on a campaign to designate May 19th a black national holiday by act of Kujichagulia self-determination. Dr. Ronald Walters of Washington, D.C., our leading black scholar and political analyst, wrote the actual declaration. We spent a full year working on this campaign. And actually, on February 21st, 1990, at the historic Abyssinia Baptist Church, we had one of the most incredible, and I guess it's still in the archives of C-SPAN, we had one of the most incredible gatherings in my lifetime. As we took that occasion, with Dr. Betty Shabazz coming out for the very first time, she had not come out on the actual day of the assassination of her dear beloved husband and partner and father of her children, but she did. And we had an amazing gathering. We had something called the National African American, the Malcolm X Commemoration Commission, chaired by Dr. James Turner. And Percy Sutton spoke that evening, as did Al Vann. I mean, it was the people from the Malcolm, Monifa Mandeli, people from the Malcolm X grassroots movement. It was packed. The church was full, and about 1,000 people spilled into the streets. I remember Spike Lee belatedly trying to get in and couldn't get in because the church was packed. And it was the launch of the of this campaign. Preston Wilcox, some of you remember him from Harlem, Mr. Harlem, Preston Wilcox. He had a Malcolm X program. He had some archives. I forget what he called it now. But on May 19th, we went to Omaha, Nebraska. And Dick Gregory supported the campaign all the way through. And on May 19th in Omaha, Nebraska, we actually issued this proclamation that this day, May 19th, would be a Black national holiday. And Dick Gregory, Dr. Mylana Karinga, Hakeem Adabudi, Sonia Sanchez, you name it, the who's who of the nationalist Pan-Africanist movement and more were there. And of course, Dr. Betty Shabazz and members of the family were there as well. I forget the actor now who was quite prominent at that time, it'll come to me later, who then read the proclamation on that day. But my point is, Dick Gregory was there. And I've seen over and over again, Dick Gregory, you know, in event after event after event, being there. So he was there to salute Malcolm. And let me just say that, among other things, you can recall, his many, many, many speeches. The ones that are most, that we sort of most know about are, of course, the message from the grassroots. And of course, the ballot or the bullet, which he did in 1964. And let me just say that, among other things, Malcolm said that Black nationalism only means that we should control the politics and economics and social life of our communities. And as we face gentrification as a growing threat in our communities, we should remember controlling the politics and economics and social life of our communities. And of course, Malcolm, too, to me, is someone that I always, you know, a lot of people do the gangster rap, some people, and I'm not necessarily saying that pejoratively, except to say that there was kind of a glorification of just sort of the gangster life and so forth and so on. And of course, Malcolm was really not a serious gangster. He was involved in petty crime. But the most important thing about it was he moved from realness, the realness of that petty crime, to becoming the most articulate, passionate, visionary, revolutionary of his era. And we remember him for all time for being that. And then finally, I would say about Malcolm, the thing that's so remarkable is his evolution and development as a brilliant person. He was a man-child in the promised land, like so many young brothers and sisters, but to some degree, men out here just lost, who are really genius, brilliant, bright, capable, able. We're finding a lot of that in terms of the war on drugs, as you know, people who were just entrepreneurs doing some very ingenious things on the street. You know, when they go to prison and you find the art and all, they become jailhouse lawyers, all of that. Malcolm went to prison and he read every book in the prison library, read it and mastered every word in the dictionary. Bad brother. And he came out and nobody wanted to debate El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz Omowale because he was a bad brother, brilliant. And an example that all of us have that genius within us, and all of us can, in fact, evolve and develop to be freedom fighters in the same way that Dick Gregory was a freedom fighter, and there are many, many, many more, the Fannie Lou Hamers, the Sojourner Truths, there are just many, many, many freedom fighters. We can all be freedom fighters and servant leaders in the way that El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz was. And so we remember Malcolm. This coming Wednesday will be the birthday of El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz, the Kusaliwa, if you will. Well, we want to go and we want to talk about a number of issues that you may want to talk about as well, but you can choose the menu. I want to talk about first the issue of the mask, because I'm frankly a little upset about the CBC stumbling on this one. It's almost as if they were just eager to just sort of hurry up and let us be free, and we certainly want to be free. But for a long time, because I'm at York College, I always tell my students to think critically, to analyze and look at things. And so for a while, I'm saying, well, when they say vaccinated people can do all these things and unvaccinated people can't, how in the hell are we going to tell the vaccinated from the unvaccinated? I mean, how are we going to figure that out? And you should be able to tell people from the beginning how that is going to occur. And if you can't figure that out and you can't tell people that, then you shouldn't do it until such time as you have sufficient numbers of people who are either vaccinated or who have caught the disease, because that will give you a degree of immunity moving towards what they're calling herd immunity. But they didn't that. They just, they were so happy. They ran it out there, and then all of a sudden, everybody started saying, well, how are we going to tell? You roll up in a store, should you have a mask on? Should you not have a mask on? If you're in the store, how do you know who's who? And people started asking that question. You were really asking first-line providers, people in the grocery stores, restaurants, they have to become the police on this issue. They don't want that responsibility. So it has become somewhat of a mess. But hopefully we can overcome it. And that's work to overcome this blunder. Because by and large, certainly, it is a hell of a lot better than what we had under the Orange Man, a.k.a. the MAGA Agent Orange. A hell of a lot better in terms of the vaccinations and moving the country forward so we can achieve some modicum of getting back to normal life. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. This is a professor on the soapbox inviting your calls. I also just want to speak to the question of voter suppression. Voter suppression out here. And I say that because we have a whole lot of people, not a whole lot, we have some people, vocal, who just don't think voting matters. I've said over and over and over again that when folks don't want you to do something, that's probably a sign that you are better examined whether to do it or not. Because what is happening is we have white nationalists who are propagating white power, and they want to preserve white power, and they're clear about it. And what they're doing is trying to, in effect, achieve, and I'm using my words deliberately, white minority rule in this country. Minority rule. So if you look at a lot of these, even these red states, the Democrats often vote, there are more votes in the state in general. But because these districts, because the states have these super red gerrymandered districts, it doesn't matter the popular vote or that Democrats outvoted the Republicans, because they can't get elected to control the legislators, and they're able to send people to Congress in a way that is really not representative of the popular vote. Similarly, what you see, you saw in the two most recent elections. I mean, Hillary Clinton had, far exceeded the Orange Man, Agent Orange, and the popular vote. And yet, because of this anachronism, which is rooted in enslavement and the suppression of black people in the first place, it didn't matter, because you had to go to these battleground states where, again, they have been gentrified in order to make sure that so these white nationalists and white power proponents and obstructionists can seize power. And then finally, they're just being out straight out about it. There are hundreds, and I had Barbara Arnwine on a few weeks ago, hundreds of laws being propagated across the state. We say it is a solution in search of a problem. No voter fraud. It's never, ever. And they keep perpetuating the big lie. And we have something that's now called Foxitis. People who attack the Capitol saying, well, the Fox News, I watched too much Fox News, and that made me did it. I'm going to do it. You know, back in the day, you had Skip Wilson said, the devil made me do it. And this is ridiculous. And so they are going to make sure. They are clamping down to make sure they're going to gerrymander the districts, voter suppressing laws. They are going to block the black vote in particular, because they're frightened of the black vote, and they're frightened of black power. And what I mean by black power is not just power that is used exclusively for black people. Our tradition has been to use our power for the advancement of ourselves and all people. 212-209-2877. The lines are open for your comments. 212-209-2877 to talk about this and other issues. And finally, we want to ask you to be our, we want you to be our foreign policy experts. What would you be doing about the crisis that has erupted again in the Middle East? What would you be doing about it? I mean, it is all out warfare again between, between Israel and the Palestinians. I'm going to put it in broad terms. And you're seeing the death and destruction. I mean, it is a problem that has been there for years and years and years and years and years. What are we going to do about this? What is your solution to the problem? I have some ideas. I certainly have some ideas about it. But I want to know from my listening audience, and we have time now to get into this, what you think should be done. 212-209-2877. We're going to go to our first caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yes. Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I'm calling about two topics. One, the topic that you mentioned, it's not an all-out war. I think it's an embarrassment for Israel.
Speak up a little louder. I'm having difficulty hearing you.
I think it's an embarrassment for Israel because it's not an all-out war. It's lopsided. It's the most sophisticated, most highly trained, highly financed army, navy, you name it. They have all the weaponry. They have all the technology. And yet they are afraid to actually fight. They are lobbying and targeting civilians and civilian targets, businesses, innocent children, innocent women. And they are, you know, they are on the receiving end of these very primitive missiles that really don't do much damage at all. And it's not appropriate to claim that it's an all-out war. They are afraid to enter the territory that they once used to rule because they are afraid of losing soldiers. And the whole world is watching as they bombard. It's just like they bombed that house in Philadelphia. They were afraid to actually, you know, do the appropriate thing and engage, try your best, you know, the normal way. And also my other topic is the NYPD. They are putting 500-600 NYPD officers in the subway as a deterrent, and I say deterrent as far as appearance. So the concept is if they are traveling or walking around on the subway platform or the trains, they will deter crime. Why can't, if they can do that on the subways, and if they can station NYPD on their extra money-making program in the Duane Reade and Barnes & Nobles and Walgreens and Target to deter and make a presence, why is it so hard for the NYPD to get out of their cars, get them off their smartphones, and guess what? Start walking the beat. Walk the beat. They don't want to do that because the commanders, no politician will say this, get out of your cars, stop acting like a paramedic waiting for a call, and walk the beat. You will never see, like the 70s and early 80s, any officer walking the beat. They're in their cars, they're having a great time on their smartphones, and they don't do anything. They act like a paramedic or EMT ambulance waiting for a call. They don't look around. They go to the 7-Eleven. They have a great time. Doing nothing.
I hear you. I hear you. And actually, I actually agree with you. I think that, building relationships matter. Living in the community matter. And if you don't live in the community, you need to know about the community you live in order to build relationships. That's a much better approach, my friend. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. 212-209-2877. Got the number correct now. 212-209-2877. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I just can hear you loud and clear.
How you doing, bud? I think you'd asked about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Yes.
And I was just, you know, it kind of baffles me why this seems to be such rocket science for people in general, I think. And now, no disparagement on folks in general, but is it me or is it the idea that the Israeli folk, the folks from Israel, seem to have some kind of power grip on the American government, right? Such that there's this consistent subsidies that go to the Israeli folks, the notion that the Israeli folks have really usurped the Palestinian people who were indigenous to that land, the notion that every year, you know, we don't question why the Israelis have nuclear weapons, and we kind of just continue to perpetuate the same thing. And and I've not really paid attention to this particular issue, but I'm starting to wake up to it, right? And I'm starting to see the consistencies across the globe as it relates to how brown people are treated under these types of contexts. This is no different to me in terms of what we see in America in many cases as it relates to how we're treated. And I really kind of wanted to get your perspective and thinking on that.
Yeah, I'm going to hold off a little bit. I'm trying to hear people's perspectives first. I do have a view on it, but I wanted to hear more and hear your perspective. And I'm going to hear others call and get their perspectives in a minute as well. But I wanted to sort of, rather than start off from my position on this one, I wanted to hear from others first. So I appreciate your perspective and your waking up to look at it and to begin to examine it and ask questions. Because it seems to me one of the most important things is we should always be willing to ask questions of anything, of anybody. I mean, that's just the nature of things and how it should be. Others can call on the soapbox at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. We have open lines. You can get in quickly. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello?
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Okay, so I have two soapbox issues. The first one is the mask issue with the CDC. I don't understand why they did that when it's less than 50% of the population that has been vaccinated. There's no reason to say that it's time to ditch the mask. I don't get that part.
No, speak up a little louder. I want to hear you're saying you're talking about when you said Center for Disease Control. Okay, go ahead. You're saying
given that there's only 40% of the population that's been vaccinated, right? That is nowhere near close to being herd immunity at all. There's no good reason for them to say you should ditch the mask. It makes no sense. I mean, I get that they want to incentivize people to get the vaccination, but it doesn't make sense.
Well, let me just say this: what they're looking at. I'm just going to recite what they're looking at, and some of it sounds reasonable. They're looking at declining infection rates, and they're looking at declining deaths and hospitalization rates, increasing vaccination rates, and what they're trying to say is that if you're fully vaccinated, that you have a get out of jail card. That's to me okay. The problem is. It's when you then relax all of the sort of guidelines and say, well, but if you're unvaccinated, you still have this and that and so forth. The problem is, how do we know who from who? That's my issue. I didn't understand that. Well, I mean, so if we don't know who's from who, particularly given, as you are citing, there were under 50% or so, between 40 and 50%, that to me makes no sense. And so to me, it's better to stay masked up until such time as there's a larger number of people.
And my second point is with the Palestinian question.
Go right ahead.
When you posed the question, you said it's a war between Israel and the Palestinians. And the minute you say it like that, you've already answered this problem, right? Because you say Israel as a country. And then you say Palestine. You don't say Palestine, you say the people. They don't have a country. They don't have a home. They don't have anything because it was taken away from them, right, and given to Israel. And every year, consistently over the next from that time till now, they've been encroached upon wherever they are. Their settlements are being razed to the ground, and new Jewish settlements are being put in. And this last one where they're bombing Gaza, I know that after this is over, they're going to come in and put in Jewish settlements.
Mm. Okay, well, appreciate your perspective. Others can call in 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877, and lively conversation on the soapbox. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon.
Yes,
you're
hello.
On air.
Yes, hello. Am I there? This is Larry.
Yeah, you're on air. You're on air. Yes.
Yes, sir. We had a writer named Shakespeare who did a play, Othello.
Mm.
Othello was the king of Morocco, and he married a white princess. To balance, we need a white man to marry a black girl. But this is not why I called. We're complaining about the difference between white power and black power. And to mix the blood is our ultimate aim of why I say great power. My brother James played at New York City Community College basketball, the only guy on a white team. The only guy white on an all-black team, and he came home and said, Larry, they're calling me gray. He was a good guy. Speaking for myself, Larry, I say, great power, exchanging gold coins in commerce on an international scale, will do wiping away of all religions worldwide, and we press emboss on the coin, not in God we trust, but in gold we trust.
Right. All right. Okay,
respond?
My friend, got you. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm not sure I quite grab it, but I got a lot of other callers calling as well. So thanks much. Appreciate your call. Let me just quickly say that the caller is right. When I pose the question, it already poses a bias, and that is the problem. The Palestinians have suffered enough. I mean, this is like the proverbial ant going up against the elephant. Supposedly, there's supposed to be a two-state solution, but the Palestinians do not have a state. And with the right-wing retrograde apartheid propagating regime of Bibi Netanyahu, who is the ultimate. And by the way, people should understand that not all Jewish people agree with the right-wing retrograde policies of this regime. That should be clear. But certainly he is taking it like on steroids, and he had a partner in Agent Orange and crushing the aspirations, or attempting to crush the aspirations of the Palestinian people. So even though they pay lip service to a two-state solution, they have systematically undermined it, violating consistently international law, violating consistently the mandates of the United Nations. And the United States has aided and abetted it all along the way. And so what you do here is what I call this obligatory. Ark! Israel has a right to defend itself. Of course Israel has a right to defend itself. Nobody would question that. The question is, do the Palestinians have a right to defend themselves? And you talk about imbalance. They can say all those rockets they're firing. Nobody, and believe me, I don't want to see anybody, no innocent person to be killed. But they, I mean, at a certain point, the desperation gets to be that people are going to fight back. And so they're showering all of these missiles that are largely being blocked by the dome, this dome that has been put up. And then you have the Israeli military forces with tanks and air power. I mean, they're just pounding the living hell out of the Palestinians. On one day, 139 people were killed. 39 of them were children. 39 children. How do you justify that? It cannot be justified. And so there is a need for I use the African proverbs that when spiders unite, they can tie up the lion. Well, the lion, we need to unite our voices, put pressure on our policymakers, because it is time to damn tie up the lion and really achieve a two-state solution where the Palestinians have a state. They are now stateless. And that's right. I was willing to say it. Now, we know that when you're talking about, somebody else talked about the grip that seems to be hovering over U.S. policies. I call it the MC Hammer syndrome. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Well, damn it, it's time to touch this. And that's what I'm saying. And I'm going to touch it. And I think we need to be organizing, mobilizing. And I think more and more people are waking up, as one of the callers indicated, to this reality, because we want justice. Justice. And again, all people are entitled to have justice. And that includes the Israelis, that includes the Palestinians. But there is a huge imbalance. And U.S. foreign policy has never been balanced in that regard. And we need to balance it by us, we the people, demanding that it be more balanced. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Now you got it. You heard it from the professor. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hello?
Got about
can
a minute.
Hello?
Yeah, you got a minute. You're on the air.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I was just listening to you. Well put. I think that it would be in Israel, really, if you think about it, their long-term interest to establish peace and two states there. I mean, all that this is doing is increasing the Arab world's hostility in the region towards Israel, which will make them, in a sense, less secure in the long run. It would be in their interest, I think, to back up a Palestinian state. I mean, why would you want these people were usurped from their homeland? They were living with the Jews for a long period of time historically. Then they were usurped. I heard about 600,000. Now the Israelis are going into the occupied areas. Where are these people supposed to go? Why wouldn't it be in the interest for Israel to set up a two-state system there and not try to dominate them and cooperate with them? And the Arabs and Jews historically back into the Middle Ages had a history of getting along very well together. So
that's
I don't
right.
understand. I don't even understand. And why in the United States, I mean, how can we these politicians and media proclaim that we're a nation of law? We pride ourselves on that. And yet, like you said, Israel was acting lawless against the United Nations and against all these international laws. And we're backing that up. So what is with this doublethink hypocrisy? Why aren't Why aren't people more questioning in this?
Well, they are, but they are beginning to question. And I have to cut you short because I've got to get ready to get off the air. But we had a vigorous discussion, and I wanted to at least get my view out there. And I'm with you. It doesn't make sense, and we have to make sense out of it. And more people have to get woke, as our dear beloved sister, Dr. Aoife Williams, said with her book with Dick Gregory, get woke and stay woke. And that's what we hear. On WBAI 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration, I said earlier, with YCRadio.org. This is the professor thanking you for listening to our show for today. And again, we'll be back again next week. I don't know what we'll talk about, but we always have a component on the soapbox so you can call in and express your views here on WBAI on Vantage Point. We'll see you again next week on Vantage Point.